Do you hate Mondays? Don't, because Monday morning means myself and George Schusterman are going to run you through everything that happened in MLB over the weekend.
You're not going to believe this, Jake, but all 30 Major League Baseball teams played multiple games this weekend, which means we have a lot to talk about. I'm going to stop yapping so that we can start yapping.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world who knows that Passover commemorates the 23 baseball teams that passed over Mike Trout in the 2009 MLB draft. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And it was actually like 20 teams because some teams have multiple picks. But the point is pure.
They did that. That was a choice that they made. And we will celebrate it over the next week. Get your matzah ready, folks. It is Passover time. We'll see how many Pesach references we can work into this pod, to Wednesday's pod, to Friday's pod. We got a long way to go here.
Has Mike Trout eaten matzah?
I'm going to go with no. I'm going to go with no. But this is, I wish I had the opportunity to ask him this last Friday, but maybe you'll see Mike Trout at some point this season and you could say, Mike, important question. No, I don't care why you're stealing bases again. I just want to know, have you had matzah? And yes, Jake, it is the first day of Passover. We are going to talk about the weekend that was in Major League Baseball. We got our Seders coming up tonight and tomorrow. You are home back in your parents' basement where you belong.
It's actually the first night of Passover, if first we're being night. Specific. It's just true. Not to be that,
that is
guy,
an important distinction for our holidays.
So
it's true.
Before we get into the specifics, I actually would like to linger a little bit on Passover here. And stick with the who's eating matzah. My question, Jordan, is who is the best active Major League Baseball player that has taken a bite of matzah? Now, the obvious choices here are the best Jews. So that would be Alex Bregman, Max Fried. Yeah. But do you think that anybody better than them has nibbled on a slice of matzah?
Yeah, I actually think those two are pretty, like, I feel pretty good about the bar that they are at. Now, I know, you know, Bregman's not having the best season, but like, I think when you consider how few players better than those guys are, like, I think it probably is them, but I don't know. Does anyone else stand out? I didn't prep for this, so I haven't thought about it too hard.
I don't think anybody actually has ever prepped for this. I think that Mookie Betts has had matzah.
All right.
He's just someone who has accomplished so much in so many different fields, and I feel like he would have crossed paths with a box of matzah.
I was
going to
say,
point,
you know, everyone says, oh, Mookie, he's just so good at everything. He's just that guy. He can just pick it up. He probably has some sort of like matzah, you know, key to Passover. It's like, all right, how can we make matzah as tasty as possible? You know, some people like to do the chocolate spread on the matzah. We got matzah pizza. Mookie probably immediately would look at that and be like, oh, like this is how you make matzah delicious. I'm like, oh, Mookie, why didn't you tell us, man? Oh. Like this guy's unbelievable.
Yeah. Ellie De La Cruz, I'll say no. But maybe, you know, bring him a slice.
I might bring him one this week. I'll see if he wants to get, I'm sure. Listen, Ellie needs no help right now. I don't want to change whatever Ellie's doing right now, whether it includes matzah or not. I don't want to change anything about that.
Let's start there, Jordan. You know, on our Sunday shows or our Monday shows, excuse me, we will run through the weekend that was, tell you about the sweeps, tell you about the series wins, series losses. And because we begin with the sweeps, let's begin with the Cincinnati Reds, who took all three games from the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. And Ellie De La Cruz is doing the thing. Heading into the season, I think there was a concern, but an open question was, yes, Ellie De La Cruz is very fun, but how good is Ellie De La Cruz? And it is April 22nd. Many things can change. But Ellie De La Cruz so far has done exactly what was asked of him. He is 12th in baseball and Fangraphs WAR. He has a WRC plus of 180. Okay, he's still striking out at a 30% clip, but at least he is walking at a 14% clip. And he is leading baseball in stolen bases with 10, tied with Lane Thomas and Bryce Turang. Home runs, 6 of them. This is the Ellie De La Cruz that we were shown glimpses of last season.
He is hitting 359, 479, 846 since the eclipse. He was not off to a great start over the first couple of weeks, people were like, oh no, this is what he looked like at the end of last season. He's striking out every game. And then since then, he rattled off four straight games without a strikeout. And now the power's showing up from both sides of the plate. The defense is still shaky. It's a little bit of a, it's a little got that, you know, Fernando Tatis Jr. feeling of it, where it's like anything can happen when the balls hit to him, for better or for worse. But he's not like, obviously everything else makes up for it. The same thing you could say about the strikeouts. And yeah, man, he's figuring it out. And the really interesting thing that happened on Sunday, and I was at Friday's game, and I could talk a little bit about the Reds and the Angels in a second, but the really interesting thing that happened yesterday, Jake, is that Ellie batted second. We saw a little bit of him at leadoff last year. This is something that I think the organization has wanted to work towards all season, and they finally did it. He had been batting sixth every game up until yesterday. They finally moved him up to second. And we'll see if that, I mean, it's like, oh my God, what were you waiting for, right? Like, he'd done everything you could have possibly wanted him to do. But yeah, man, it's, again, I've talked about Ellie a ton, and I'm sure I will moving forward, but he's absolutely doing everything you could hope from him. It's pretty cool.
He has, at least on defense, he has like Alec Bohm disease, where he's simply so far from where the ground is.
Oh yeah.
Like, he is all the way up there and the ball is usually all the way down there, that to go get the ball, it's simply longer. Like, he has to go further through space to field a ground ball because it is far from him. That's more of a problem I've seen, at least for him, like going to his backhand, like being able to reach down to get the ball is harder for him. But like, if he never figures out the shortstop defense and he figures everything else out, that's fine. Like, yeah. Not a problem.
Yeah, that's the thing there. And that's why right now, you know, you're gonna roll with him there. And I think he can be a shortstop, and we'll see. They have plenty of other shortstops you know, coming up through their system, and they have McLean and Edwin Arroyo, whatever. The point is what he's doing offensively right now, and what he can do on the bases is borderline singular. I mean, when you combine the elite speed and the aggression, he's really special.
The one other important development for the Reds, at least over the weekend, is that catcher Tyler Stevenson hitting the yellow bile and black bile, all four humors, out of the baseball right now. Now, I would say that the catching position was one of the bigger offensive question marks for the Reds entering the season, just because Stevenson has a track record as like a top prospect and a highly touted guy, you know, top 10 pick in the draft. But injuries have kind of precluded him over the last couple seasons from being the franchise catcher of the Reds, and a lot of people expected him to be. Just to see him hitting the crap out of the ball is a really refreshing thing, and could solidify that position for Cincy for the rest of the season.
Absolutely. And yeah, I mean, you look, he's still hitting 200, but he's just been hitting the ball really hard. The barrel rate's been up. This is more like what he looked like as a rookie. 2021, he finished sixth in the rookie of the year, had a 797 OPS, which is fantastic for a catcher, let alone at the time a rookie. He's had a lot of injuries. He's taken some time. But that is, again, they were not, the expectations for him to be a huge part of their offense this year was less so, because they actually have some other good hitters now. So there's less pressure on him, and now he's actually performing. So the Reds, again, they sweep the White Sox, they get swept by the Mariners, they sweep the Angels. We're starting to kind of figure out where they figure out. They're solid. They still have some questions. Montas leaves after getting hit with a comebacker. Their pitching is still kind of fluctuating up and down. But yesterday was another strong performance of what's been going well for the Reds, as they paid a lot of money to kind of add to the pitching depth with Nick Martinez and Brent Suter and Pagan. Those guys saved their ass yesterday after Montas left in the first or second inning. So they're solid, and they're going to be right in the mix. And if Ellie's going to play like this, they're going to have a chance in a lot of games, because he's one of the few players that can win games on his own when he's on.
For every winner, there's a loser. The Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Yeah. You were around this group. It's a bizarre assortment of players, buoyed by Mike Trout being outstanding. Now, he was incredible during the series against the Rays in the middle of the week. Not as much
little
this
more
past
quiet.
Weekend against Cincy. Just being around Anaheim, what was the vibe you picked up? I'm curious.
Yeah. So I'll preface what I'm about to say by saying I'm writing about Trout this week and listening to Wash talk about him. Like, every reason to be excited and believe that like Trout is absolutely going to be in the MVP mix again, regardless of what happens with the Angels. That said, I mean, what we saw now with Rendon getting hurt again, he pulls a hamstring, he leaves. Now, Rendon had been, I think he'd missed one game. He'd been leading off every day. He'd been making a crazy amount of contact. The power is basically nowhere to be found. But, like, he's been fine. Like, that's the player that you can have on your roster. And I know he's, again, regardless of the contract and the history, that's fine. Like, that's a piece that you can use. But, man, the rest, just the depth is so shallow. And of the young guys, which Wash keeps talking about, it's like we are going with them and they're learning every day. Ohapi's awesome. And Shanuel and Neto have been really, really slow to start the year. And they just have so much invested in those two guys or those three guys as being key parts of their offense. And it's just not enough. So that's really where they're at. Jose Soriano is now a sneaky, like, I can't believe he's starting. He looked fantastic yesterday, but it's just a thin roster. And we kind of knew that coming in, and they're not bad. Miguel Sano is like a legitimately good hitter and a good player for them, which is fun. But other than that, it's just not enough. It's just not enough.
Did you have a moment? This happened to me on opening day when I saw the Angels. How large the bullpen is physically?
You know what I actually felt that was in the clubhouse. I
mean, a lot of Estevez big dudes on
is
that
enormous. Luis Garcia is enormous, right? Cisnero, I guess now he started. Jose Suarez is he's a unit in a slightly different way.
They got Strickland. Some units.
Hunter Strickland is randomly on this team. He's pretty gigantic. So yeah, no, I guess you're kind of onto something. But,
they should be the Los Angeles. The Los Angeles lads of Anaheim, because they are just absolute.
Yeah. The other last thing on Washington, but I know we've gone way too long in the series. He talked about how, like, they emphasized first pitch strikes. And this is before Friday's game. He's like, we're going to sit them all down when we get back home. And we're going to have them explain to us why they've gotten away from throwing first pitch strikes. I was like, Wash, like, we need to do that right now, dude. Like, like, we can't wait until we're back home. Like, you're about to lose. And then they just got swept. And I was like, oh, okay, well, all right. Again, I think I still like what Wash is bringing. Obviously, it's a new tone. I do think he's going to improve them in some aspects. But the roster is the roster. And that's kind of where they're at. So good for the Reds for taking advantage. And the Angels they're okay. But they got a lot of work to do.
That wasn't the only sweep that you brushed shoulders no. with over the weekend, no. as you made an appearance mm-hmm. at Progressive Field
yes.
in Cleveland, Ohio, where the MLB best
yes.
Cleveland Guardians are playing their baseball. Now, sweeping the 2024 Oakland A's, the frisky Oakland A's, is not exactly worthy of a banner or a trophy, but three wins are three wins. And you saw these Guardians for the first time this season, I believe. Yep. What were your takeaways? How real are they? What struck your fancy?
Yeah, so I was there for Andrés Giménez's first day off, which is relevant because this lineup that they rolled out included, and they're facing lefty, this lineup they rolled out included David Fry, Tyler Freeman, Gabriel Arias, Austin Hedges, and Brian Rocchio. And I was like, oh my God, this is the best team in baseball. David Fry hitting second, and it works. And again, they're playing the A's, and the A's offense, Brent Rooker hit a couple home runs this weekend. He came back, which is nice. You know, the A's have some things to look forward to, but let's just focus on Cleveland here because they're 16-6. I mean, my takeaway so far is just they are very injured. They are not necessarily the team we expected them to be, but with Josh Naylor being one of the best hitters in baseball, Ramirez hasn't even gotten going yet. With Stephen Kwan looking like rookie Stephen Kwan, I saw him get four hits on a Saturday. And the bullpen's awesome. It's anonymous, but it's awesome. If they can get enough, and it's weird that now our biggest concern is the starting pitching. My biggest concern is still the bottom half of this lineup. But they are all in on Stephen Vogt. Like, Stephen Vogt is pressing all the right buttons. He has come right in perfectly, almost in that same sense as we've talked about with Skip, where it's like, and with even less experience, right? Skip actually had a little bit more time in the dugout and whatnot before he started managing, but it was like, damn, this guy was just playing. He comes right in. He gets it. He understands the tone he has to set. He understands the bullpen manage. He has all of that. Coaching staff is great. So, yeah, it's not shocking because this infrastructure here has been so strong. But, yeah, I was impressed. I was impressed with them.
Got it. You have a comment on here that says, do you know the A's bullpen catcher?
All right, well,
and I looked it up.
You.
and I do now. It is Escogido legend Wilkin Castillo.
Yes,
but Jordan,
yes.
Do you know that the Rays bullpen catcher is Charlie Valerio, the other Escogido catching legend? This is such a specific.
No, but again, it's just, I was looking, you know, you look at the coaching staffs because you know who the top few guys are and you want to see like, oh, who's on the staff that you're not thinking of? Who are some special assistants that might be around? Like, I remember seeing Pedro Alvarez in the Brewers clubhouse a couple weeks ago. I was like, whoa, what, Pedro Alvarez, what is he doing here? But yes, as someone who watches Lee Dome all the time, Wilkin Castillo, who is like the Johnny Bench of Escogido, he was wearing a bucket hat and he had one of these. Have you ever seen like the tiny, tiny bat that you like break gloves in with? That's basically bat. Yeah. So he had that in his back pocket. He was wearing these like crazy, you know, Jordans. He was just, everyone loves
would have been sleeveless if not for the cold weather.
Yeah, but he was wearing less than most people. He's just, wow, swaggiest bullpen catcher I've seen. So anyway, shouts out to Wilkin. All right, that's enough Ohio. Jake, let's get to the other sweep. Oh, we have three more sweeps. The Phillies taking three. Wait, last week, they only had one sweep, I believe. We have three more sweeps. The Phillies over the White Sox. White Sox got swept last week against the Reds. This time they go to Philadelphia. And they get pantsed once again, I believe, multiple no-hit bids into the sixth or seventh innings. The White Sox are now 3-18 with a minus 71 run differential. They are horrific. That was another thing that was just a regular point of topic at both in Cincinnati and Cleveland was, wow, the White Sox are so bad. The team would just like come up as random other writers or coaches or whatever. So they stink. I didn't watch much of this. I know Zach Wheeler was awesome, and then they somehow made that game sort of interesting. But anything else from this game? I mean, the Phillies did what they needed to do.
Yeah. So the Phillies, there is nothing that'll get you right like the Rockies and White Sox coming to town for series and then having an off day in between. I mean, you want to talk about things teams love for the vibes. Rockies in town, take three.
Easiest W6 of the year.
Oh my God. And like not even a sweat broken. Yeah. This was very much TCing the business. Zach Wheeler looks phenomenal. He's been great. But you know, the big development for the Phillies in the early going is that Spencer Turnbull has been one of their best pitchers, which has been important because before Aaron Nola's start on Sunday against the White Sox, he had been their shakiest starter.
Yeah.
He's, you know, slow starter, whatever. But Turnbull's like created a very interesting scenario where Taiwan Walker is going to get back from injury in a second. And it's not like you can bounce Turnbull back to the bullpen.
Sounds like they might though, because it's hard to believe. I know Turnbull, of course, is coming off more serious injury. His workload has been either non-existent or lesser in recent years. They could say we want to save him, but it's like, look, man, he's clearly one of your best starters. Maybe it's a situation where you move into the pen for a bit and then you eventually transition him back, you know, more down the stretch. But I don't know. I agree. I mean, this is even after two Turnbull starts, I was like, they're going to have a decision to make here.
I mean, if everyone stays healthy in that rotation, neither Turnbull nor Walker will start the playoff game because Sanchez would start the fourth game and Ranger would start the third game. Now, things never really worked to plan like that.
Yeah.
But in some ways, that is what they're planning for. The offense, Trey Turner has been great, which is huge. They don't have to applaud him now. We should say, Whit Merrifield, after I dunked on him on Friday and said that he was the only qualified player in baseball without a hard hit ball, went out and hit a home run on Friday, I believe.
Yes.
At just over the hard hit line, he hit it 95.3 miles an hour. If he had hit a home run at 94.9, I would have laughed so hard. That's very hard to do, to hit a home run that's not a hard hit ball.
It's doable.
So Whit Merrifield off the goose egg hard hit ball train. That's very good for him. Johan Rojas looked a little bit better over the weekend, getting on base, getting some more base hits, still not really walking at all. And then Brandon Marsh has just been a fascinating hitter to watch this year. He's striking out at just a preposterous rate, but his at-bats, especially against righties, just look really good. And I've just been impressed with him. And I'm curious to see when they kind of let him play every day. Phillies are good. Not like playing the Rockies and the White Sox. You don't learn anything. But compared to like how slow the Phillies have started each of the last two seasons in which they ended up making the playoffs, this is like humongous. This is like en fuego April for the Phillies.
I mean, that's the thing. And, you know, you play, you wake up and suddenly they're 14-8 and you're suddenly feeling like, oh yeah, that's the Phillies. Of course. Phillies are in Cincinnati this week for four. I will probably only be there for one of those games, but I am definitely going to eat some matzo with Garrett Stubbs.
Let's bring a whole box. Bring a whole box and see if you can like, because if you can get Zach Wheeler to eat matzo, I think he would maybe then be the best player in baseball.
At the very least, I will ask Garrett Stubbs, like, has Bryce had some matzo? Have you given Bryce some matzo?
Has Bryce ever eaten matzo?
Yeah. We'll see. That can be one of my goals this week. I'll report back later this week. We have two more sweeps, and then we will take a break. Jake Mintz, against all odds, against all injuries, the Boston Red Sox went into Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, who has managed to throw their hot start in the garbage even faster than last year, as they are on an L6, they get swept at home by the Boston Red Sox. The Boston Red Sox, who lose another player to injury, as Tristan Cassis has a rib injury. I don't know if he's going on the IL, but they are in a bad, bad, bad place. And yet, what did I just say? They just swept the Pirates. They're 13-10. Their pitching is still largely intact enough to like win baseball games. There's no reason for me to expect them to keep this up because they're so injured on offense, especially. But credit to them, credit to the Red Sox for finding a way here and taking advantage of a Pirates team that offensively, as you mentioned last week, is in a bad spot. And all the nice things we just said about Ellie De La Cruz, unfortunately, we cannot say them about O'Neill right now. It is not all about him, and focusing on him is unfair. Of course, he's now supposed to be one of the faces of the team. So when he struggles, it's easy to put it on him. This whole lineup right now is, besides, I guess, like Connor Joe, is not doing their job.
Yeah, offense is butt. Like, this is a bad offense. I was optimistic when I saw them, like, just because the pitching was so real. And I think the run prevention is good. And there are some components there. But boy, oh boy, they can't hit. Like, this is not, there's some pieces here that you can envision, like, helping the Pirates be good. Like, Brian Reynolds is a good baseball player, but like, it's just as a whole, it's just not a good lineup. It's not a good enough lineup.
Well, and it just sucks because it's like they, another 500, it's like, I wish like they had enough to make me think, all right, like make this interesting, but, and they still could, you know, but it's that we gotta start picking up. Hey, I mean, it's Jared Jones day. It's Jared Jones day today, Pirates fans. Yep. Let's just soak it in. You got your guy Skeens will be here soon. Skeens is unbelievable. Like it's gonna be okay.
I like Rowdy Tellez, but the difference between Rowdy Tellez and Rhys Hoskins is notable in this context, right? Because why is Rhys Hoskins not on the Pirates? Because they're too cheap, right? They're too cheap. The Brewers, who are cheap, are less cheap than the Pirates. And so they were willing to pay for Rhys Hoskins. Rhys Hoskins is not an all-star level hitter, but he would be the second best hitter on the Pirates right now.
That's what you would bank on. Yeah.
Right.
Feel good about. Mm-hmm.
And that's where not spending the money comes into play, right? Yep. We're like, Hoskins is definitely a guy that the Pirates had some level of interest in, but couldn't afford. And now he would have made the offense good single-handedly, right? But afford, you know what I mean by afford.
Yeah.
Quickly on the Red Sox, the lineups that the Red Sox are rolling out right now are like the lineups that you see tweeted when like a team gets good. And it's like looking back at like, oh my God, remember that lineup when guy was hitting fourth?
Again, like it's not an act. I mean, we're looking at some split squad. This is the lineup they rolled out on Sunday. Rafaela, Duran, Ref Snyder, Abreu, Wong, Dahlbeck, Reyes, Heineman, Valdez. And they won 6-1. That's literally the Woo Sox. I mean, that's, I know,
they just
like,
need Rusty Castillo there.
We make that joke. Sorry, one more like White Sox stray here. I apologize. Ooh. Someone was like, I think it was someone at some point was saying like, the Reds. It was someone in the Reds press box at some point was like, yeah, oh no, they're facing, oh, they just swept the White Sox. Like, no, they swept the White Sox AAA lineup. I'm like, no, that's the White Sox. Like, in this case, like, there are better players on the Red Sox that are injured. So there's a reason they happen to be rolling out a bunch of AAA players. The White Sox are like, no, that's their team. we're not really missing. I mean, against Luis Robert and Moncada, but. Anyway,
maybe I'm a little early here, but I would like to induct Masataka Yoshida into the Hall of Mid.
Oh, I think Oh yeah. It's so great because it's like his OBP ability is too good to like sink to depths that are, you're like, oh, he's bad. Yeah. Now the problem is that he's a DH. And so in theory, he needs to be better than what he's hitting.
Yeah.
But no, I think you're onto something there. He's
like, this could be a historically mid career. Like we are witnessing mid greatness here. And I think that we should, I'm going to get on the ground floor of it. Again, not bad. He's not bad. Like he's not good, but he's not bad. If he could hit for a little more power or like run a little faster or play a little bit of defense.
But that's also not happening.
I don't think he can.
He's a very weird player.
He's a super weird player. That's the Boston Red Sox. One more sweep before we take a break. The St. Louis Cardinals were your pick to win the NL Central.
Yeah. Thank you for leading with that. I appreciate that. Is that how you're going to introduce them for the rest of the season? When they're like 20 games under 500? You're just going to keep telling me that
I'm just going to keep saying that. Because you have been high on the Cardinals and a Cardinals defender for a couple years now. They got swept at home by the Brewers. Where are you at now? Are you jumping ship? Would you pick another team in the NL Central today if I gave you the opportunity?
So part of the reason why I keep saying no is that like it's because I don't want to pick between the other ones as much as I do want to pick the Cardinals, because I still don't know what I'm looking at between the Brewers and Cubs. But of course, from a strictly confidence standpoint, you have to feel better about those two teams. Yeah, I mean, again, at this point, I said it last week when it was like, oh, are you jumping ship here? I was like, listen, as long as Arenado and Goldie are bad hitters, then they're going to be doomed from the start. Like I was baking in that they were going to be very good players. Arenado has picked it up. He's been better, but you know, Goldie has got a 507 OPS, and Jordan Walker has been atrocious. That's one other thing I've been completely wrong on. Right.
Victor Scott's gone.
He's back. But that one, that's not his fault. He was not supposed to be playing in the big leagues, but yeah, he hit 085, and that wasn't shocking. And now he goes back to AAA. Listen, it's possible they're going to be in too big of a hole again, but they're still – we'll get Edmund back here at some point. But the pitching – I swear I have not seen Miles Michaelis, like, pitch well. And I know he threw 300 innings last year or whatever. Like, every time I turn his start on, he's giving up a home run. I just don't know what to make of it. This is just no reason to be excited about the pitching staff. So
we make a living knowing things about baseball. I just want to expose us here. Jordan, I believe before the season, we were asked by the folks at Yahoo Fantasy, who is a veteran player who still has it? You said Kyle Gibson.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm actually going to stick on this one. I'm not even kidding. I am not. Kyle Gibson is not even the top three or four of my Cardinals concerns.
Okay, so, because I said Carlos Santana, and he has been like the worst hitter in baseball.
Yeah, that one was even. So all right, so maybe we'll both take massive L's there. But that, thank you for pointing that out, because Kyle Gibson has certainly, even with his 5 ERA, has been more worthwhile than Carlos Santana. Bless his heart.
The Brewers, Milwaukee, though.
Hold on. I mean, like, first of all, William Contreras is so freaking good, but you get a little Jackson Churio, opposite field homer. He's starting to swing it. You got a Reese homer. Bryce Turang is hitting against righties, which is great.
That's the one that I did not expect. Like, I assumed that their second baseman, Bryce Turang, was just going to be like, essentially,
he was going to be like,
Wong. Like a Colton Wong type, where it's like great defense, not a lot of pop, put the ball in play, can go on the bases, whatever. Like, he like hits seventh for you, and like he's just not an interesting offensive player. He's really added a lot to his game this year, where he's a lot more dynamic than he'd been in the past.
I mean, again, they're perfectly platooning him. He's only received 6 plate appearances against left-handed pitching, and he's 0-for-6 in those 6 plate appearances. But he's got a 968 OPS against right-handers, which is like this is what Tampa has done so well, is just like perfectly maximizing your players in a way. And he's got 10 steals and hasn't been caught, right? So he's leveling up in a really impressive way, which just makes their whole lineup, not to mention Blake Perkins. It's just that's a whole other wild, thing. But credit to them that he's a guy that's stepped up in a way that, you know, Sal Frelick hasn't necessarily, you know, really gotten going offensively. He's hitting, but not necessarily for power yet. So it's a solid team. I'm still looking at this pitching staff and saying, how in the hell is this working? And that was what was so disappointing when you watched the Cardinals this weekend, is it's like, man, like, score some runs against some of these arms, but the Brewers are proving a lot so far. They're solid.
I understand it's early, but the Cardinals are already 6 games back at the Brewers, and like, that's a decent amount of games. Like, 6 games is, yeah, it's more than 5. So
yeah, keep an eye on that. More than 4.
So. And more than 4. Let's take a quick break, and when we return, we'll fly through the rest of the series that we're not seeing. And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. I'm not the only famous person in Washington, D.C. right now, Jordan, because over the weekend, the 2019 Nats had a bit of a reunion at the yard. That's right, the world champion Nationals from 2019 did their 5-year anniversary celebration, correctly timed for the Astros coming into town, who the Nats beat in that World Series. And I would say that, like, all of the second-level dudes on that team were there. Gerardo Parra, who is a coach for the team, was there. But Kurt Suzuki was in attendance. Anibal Sanchez was in attendance.
Brian Dozier. Kendrick,
had Brian a shirt Dozier, off. Howie Kendrick, right. Adam mm-hmm. Eaton. Right, like, oh, yeah. All the cult heroes were there. And then none of the, I guess Patrick Corbin is still on the team, but like, yeah, none of Scherzer, obviously Soto not there,
but
Trey
they
Turner,
them,
Rendon.
I believe a bunch of them like recorded videos that they played. I didn't see like the specific, but I did see that like there was video of Anthony Rendon being like, "Hey, Nats fans, remember me? Like, I used to be awesome. Don't ask where I'm at now, but I was so good in 2019," which is true. Anthony Rendon 2019. One of the great full seasons, regular season plus amazing postseason that we've had in the 21st century.
Amazing.
He was amazing. But yeah, no, I mean, again, we've talked about it a million times. It means a little bit more to us because we grew up in the area and we understand where the Nats started and where they ended up. And my family's Nats fans, but it was cool.
That team never got the shine
right
that it earned because they won it 2019 and then the year after you win is supposed to be like the victory lap where you wear the gold trim and you eat rings and attendance is up and like you're the talk of the town. Because of COVID, right, that never happens. And so I know that Rendon left after that season, whatever, but like the 2019 Nats never got the victory lap. And
yeah,
so
I mean, right, they got the parade, but not the next year where it's like we're
right
the team, right? Yeah,
exactly. They never got that. And yeah, so all these like little celebrations do have like an extra level of coolness to them. And I know that whenever everyone's done, right, whenever Soto will be he'll be the last one. Okay. He'll be the last 2019 National to hang him up. Almost certainly.
I feel pretty good about that.
Feel pretty good about that. Whenever that time comes in, you know, 2040 or whatever, when they do 2039, when they do like the 20-year anniversary, it's going to be so cool to have everybody there. The one notable thing is, I guess, Steven Strasburg was not there. He is now officially retired, but he did not show up. I imagine that he will have his time, his day in the sun with the Nationals.
Yes. But and Zimmerman, pivot. I just want to say Zimmerman's there. He had a fantastic quote about just like how important Strasburg was. He had the quote, he literally pitched his arm off. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
The Strasburg thing, we've talked about it before. We've done pods about him before. But the Nats, we always salute that team. It is a hell of a group.
And the pesky 2024 Nationals made it worth it. Beating
absolutely
the Astros once again. Doing, yes, Jordan, doing what the 2019 Nationals could not do. Beating the Houston Astros in Washington, D.C.
At home. Okay. Wow. I didn't know. Victor Robles is somehow still there.
I know.
He's like, whoa, look at us.
Wow.
Yeah. So Verlander comes back on Friday. The Astros win that game. But then Saturday, oh my gosh, the Astros go with, I believe they go with Presley for the save on Saturday. And that doesn't go well. The Astros bullpen right now is right. Cause on, so Blanco pitches and Blanco was good. He gives up the homer to Abrams, but he still goes 6 innings. Montero scoreless, Brian Abreu scoreless. And then Presley gives up two homers or two runs in the 9th. And then they lose in the 10th. and a walk-off. And then on Sunday, they just get dominated by Mitchell Parker in his second career start. And the Astros are now 7-16. They're 7-16 with a minus 28 run differential.
Sifting through the problems on the Astros to figure out what's real and will sustain and what is small sample size theater is difficult. Like, I am legitimately worried about how bad Jose Abreu has been. And talking to people that have pitched against him so far this season, the consensus is that Big Dog is cooked, which is a bummer because he's an awesome player.
One of our favorites.
Great career. But Abreu, it's just, it's not something that is going to get better, right? Whereas, like, the bullpen, the back three of Abreu, Presley, and Hader, which we thought would be, like, the best late-inning trio in baseball, they've been terrible. And, like, I think that has to turn around. That's been a legitimate surprise that that group has not been good. I still would pick the Astros to win the division. Call me nutso, but I'm getting less and less confident every single day.
I'm certainly – now, remember, I picked the Astros to be in the World Series or win the World Series. Terrible. But I still pick the Mariners to win the division.
An unhinged prediction because
I think I said that the Mariners would win barely and then the Astros would beat them in the CS or whatever. The Astros bullpen right now has third worst ERA of any team. Do you know who is worst? This is interesting. It's the Giants and the Phillies have the two worst bullpen ERAs in baseball. But the Astros, which was supposed to be the best, full stop, what more do you want to see, has been atrocious. And it's really, really something. Really something to watch. And they just keep getting injured. Christian Javier hits the IL with a neck injury. Fromber, we still don't really know when he's coming back. Nice to have Verlander back, but I mean, man, they are searching for innings. I just want to quickly check their playoff probability because it's like, yeah, I want to say, oh, the Astros will still win the division, but it has to have dropped significantly.
Yeah.
So I'm going to look at that and then we can move on.
The Astros and Red Sox should come together. I mean, they've got enough for like one good team compared with all the injuries they've had.
So I'm just looking at this. To win the division, the Astros, according to Fangraphs, started the season at 60%, and it has dropped to 35%. So it's not like it doesn't say doomed, it helps that the top of this division is still, you know, not great. But man, oh man, they are going to have to like get hot. This isn't a matter of surviving. Like, you got to start playing really good baseball.
It's a bad start. There's no two ways around that. Yeah. Quickly, CJ Abrams is amazing. He is figuring it out. He is 23 years old. He is a wonderful reminder that our baseball watching minds have been warped and ruined by the accomplishments of guys like Juan Soto and Ronald Acuna Jr. and Corbin Carroll and Julio Rodriguez. Top prospects do not always come up and dominate right away. Certain skill sets need time to cook, to develop, to adjust to the big leagues. And Abrams, who came up, I believe, at 21 for the Nats after being traded over from the Padres, struggled. Like, he had real flaws in his offensive game and still has flaws in his defensive game. And it was easy to not forget about him, but almost disregard him as someone who is not elite on the same level as the Bobby Witts and the Corbin Carrolls and the Gunnar Hendersons. But so far this season, at least from an offensive perspective, he has been that. He has been just as good as any of those guys. And there's still a lot of things to work on with the glove at shortstop. I'm still skeptical that he can be a big league, like, elite defensive shortstop. There's an argument that you just put him in center and let him go run balls down. Eventually, if it doesn't get any better. But boy, oh boy, has this guy made huge strides at the plate and deserves a lot of credit. And like that, CJ Abrams becoming like a 4-win, 5-win player makes me feel so much better about like the 2026 Washington Nationals. It's a huge deal, I think.
And because of where they're at, you know, they should absolutely let him play shortstop for as long as he can, right? Let him figure it out. Let him. Get him the right coaches and let it happen, because you'll take all of that as long as he's doing that. So he's been tremendous, and their pitching has been, besides Corbin, who continues to be just shockingly horrible, Trevor Williams, solid. Jake Irvin looks great. Mitchell Parker looks like he's getting Gore's been good. So we'll see how injured Josiah Gray is. But Nats are, you know, we kind of said this last year even, but that's not necessarily a team you're going to walk all over.
Davey Martinez gets the boys ready to play. All right. Davey Martinez gets the guys going.
But Abrams is different because that's what they've just offensively since they traded Soto. They have not had anybody that scares you at all. Yeah. Now Abrams is actually the opportunity to do that.
Let's fly through some of these. The Orioles taking 2 out of 3 from the Kansas City Royals. Royals beating down the O's on Friday before Baltimore taking the last two. Saturday was the much hyped pitching duel between Corbin Burns and Cole Reagans. I believe that the final score was 9-7.
I mean, the Royals were coming back there. They made it interesting. After winning that game, the Orioles had a big lead. Royals were coming back, couldn't quite get there. And then the Orioles kind of stomped them on Sunday. Who pitched for Baltimore on Sunday?
Sunday was Cole Irvin.
Cole Irvin.
Best start of his Orioles career. I believe he went 6 2/3, looked really good.
And then
Couser and Jordan Westberg have both been just unbelievable. And
so,
go ahead.
I mean, well, we've mentioned Couser already, right? But I don't think he's technically qualified yet in terms of plate appearances. Jordan Westberg, who is a qualified hitter, is 7th
very
in OPS.
Qualified. He's very qualified.
He's qualified. That's true. He's clearly qualified to be there. But like as far as, you know, minimum number of plate appearances being on the leaderboards, he's 7th in OPS right now behind, you know, right behind Juan Soto and CJ Abrams and Ellie De La Cruz.
And it's a good reminder of why the Orioles have been the number one system in baseball. Yeah. And we had them at 1 in our young talent rankings. Is it's not just Holiday, Henderson, Rutschman. The second level of offensive talent they have is capable of getting to the big leagues and doing what Westberg has done.
And guess what? It might not be the second level. Like Jordan Westberg might be the first level. We don't know yet.
There is a legitimate chance.
Yeah.
Right? Like we could talk about Jackson Holiday briefly, just quickly. He's been horrible at the plate. The rest of the Orioles lineup has been so good that they're just letting him take his lumps and figuring things out at the big league level. He's been playing good defense at second base, so it's fine. I'm a little worried. I think maybe if it keeps going, they'll send it back to AAA to figure some things out. I think I would have said this before he came up. It is totally within the realm of possibility that Jordan Westberg has a better career than Jackson Holiday, right? Like every team would rather have Jackson Holiday than Jordan Westberg. But when we talk about prospects and young players, that gap is usually smaller than you think. And so the Orioles are, as an organization, are just giving themselves a really good opportunity to have guys succeed at the big league level.
And it's a reminder of how valuable it is to see someone already succeed at the major league level the way we did with Westberg last year. The amount of confidence that gives you. You don't know anything until you actually see it over a sample at the highest level. I don't know how many prospects we need to see torch every level of the minors, and then when they suck in the big leagues, it's like, oh no, what happened? It's like, well, guess what? Because it's a lot harder in the major leagues. Let's move on to the New York Yankees, who took 2 of 3 over the Tampa Bay Rays. Of course, we had the John Sterling celebration over the weekend. I guess Saturday was the game that they ended up losing in extra innings against Tampa. But they are, I mean, Juan Soto. The thing with Juan Soto right now is he's elevating the baseball, Jake. Launch angle is not a simple thing that you can just point to and say, hey, that's when it is, you can see it on anyone's Savant page. When you see, oh, he's actually elevating the ball more, when your plate discipline is already the best in the world, that is a huge deal. Right. Some guys is okay, I'm going to start lifting the ball more, and it doesn't actually lead to more production because you're not that good of a hitter and you're not actually lifting or pulling more fly balls. If Juan Soto is actually finding a way to elevate the baseball more, he's going to have one of, if not the best season of his career.
This has gone exactly how it was supposed to go. This is why the Yankees gave up what they gave up to go get Juan Soto, even if just for a year. This has been unbelievable. I mean, he is
I think it's been very believable. Yes. Like, yeah. To me, this is exactly what I pictured.
Yeah, it's believable. He has just electrified the place, right?
Yeah.
Juan Soto at bats have always been must-see TV, but to throw that thing in pinstripes just elevates the entire experience. And I, you know, we joke about Yankee dumb, like that world. It does just mean more to see him doing it in the pins. Like, it elevates the whole thing.
And then booing Judge and is so funny. I think the booing Judge is whatever. We've had enough boo discourse on here. But it is something where it's like, they're like, we want to see the two best player hitters in the world do it at the same time. Like, come on, we want to see it already. It's like, you will. You will at some point. Not there yet. It's fine. Juan Soto is automatic, though. That's the other thing about him, right?
Yeah.
Like, in the way that, because he doesn't really strike out, like, when Juan Soto is bad, he's, like, ripping grounders to second base.
Yeah. It's like, or, like, popping out in foul territory right. to the third baseman.
Right.
When he's really bad.
He doesn't look bad. Like, sometimes the numbers are slowed down because he's hitting balls to the wrong people or whatever. Judge is
like swinging through stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but Soto, it's like, oh, he's even though he was a Yankee, he's still my favorite, man. He's
one other thing from the series. Richie Palacios, friend of the show, Brooklyn born, Brooklyn raised, played his first game New York. Yeah. So he was with the Guardians and then the Cardinals and had never played a big league game in New York, where he's from. And he has been really good this year. Just a great example of the Rays finding someone who now is just hitting third for them. And in his first game at Yankee Stadium, he homered and I think had a double. And it was just watching the home run. I don't know if you watched it, Jordan, but him rounding the bases, very rarely do you see the, like, look at what it means to it that you hear in, like, English
right,
soccer.
Or
right?
just, like, that they can tell how cool it is
it
what
is.
They're doing.
Yeah.
You could see Richie Palacios not hide anything. Yeah,
you could see his, but it wasn't in like a like overt way. You could just see like his childhood flashing before his eyes as he rounded the bases in Yankee Stadium after going yard. It's so sick. It's so cool. I asked him how many tickets he had left, and he said, just for my parents, because otherwise I'd be playing for free, I thought was a very wise answer. Let's move on from the series. Just fly through a couple more. Tigers over the Twins. Twins offense, still terrible. Yeah. I'm still sticking to my guns. I'm hanging on to the Twins as long as you hang on to the Cardinals. They will sink
That's
us. I think that beating the... feels like the Twins and Tigers have played 100 games against each other already.
It does. The one thing about this series I just wanted to mention is Casey Mize. I know the Twins lineup has been bad. Six scoreless from Casey Mize. I don't think Casey Mize is someone we really talked or thought about enough coming into the season as far as that Tigers rotation. I mean, whatever. He's the number one pick. And like when he's on, he's very fun to watch. And so that's just something. Again, I know I'm lower on the Tigers than you are, but because it's more about the offense, that's one where that could really be a huge deal to have him back and looking at full strength.
Mets taking 2 out of 3 from the Dodgers in Los Angeles before getting sent into the nether worlds by LA on Sunday in a blowout. But the Mets, they're
Reed
so
Garrett.
Interesting right now.
Reed Garrett, baby. Now, again, it sucks because it's like you talked to us on Saturday night and it's like, oh my God, the Mets. Sunday, they get their ass kicked. Francisco Alvarez is now out. Surgery on his thumb, which is just devastating for not just because he's been, of course, one of their better hitters, but like he was such of what we were excited about the future of the Mets and what we're looking forward to. It's not as serious as, you know, Ronnie Mauricio blowing out his leg and not playing the whole season. But like that's someone that as we're thinking about what the best version of this Mets team looks like. It sucks that he's now going to be out. Still looking at this pitching staff and saying, how in the world are they doing it? We sort of saw the bad side of that on Sunday. But yeah,
let me be clear. They're fine. Let me be clear. I was the queen of the Buto hive, of the
That's
Jose
true.
Buto train. I've been driving that train, and he's been great. The other thing I want to mention, Starling Marte. Mm-hmm. What a guy. What a ball player, man.
He's fun. Healthy Marte is a...
Oh.
He's a great... what a difference between healthy and Herm. As you can say this about a lot of players. But like, Marte not at 100% is a pretty tough watch. And maybe he is still dealing with some stuff now, but like, he is one hell of an athlete and just a fun baseball player to watch. On the Dodgers, Ohtani breaks Hideki Matsui's record for most homers by a Japanese-born player in the big leagues. Very cool to see that. He had been sort of scuffling. And yeah, I mean, I would say that the two other takeaways for the Dodgers this weekend, other than that, you know, they avoided falling to 500 if they had lost that Sunday game, is Glasnow with just a ridiculous, angry, we like to call them angry wins when really good teams lose a couple games in a row and they're like, oh, we ain't messing around this last one. Glasnow, only his third outing of eight innings of his career, one of the best starts of his big league career, eight innings, seven hits, no walks, 10 strikeouts. And then the other thing to watch here, because we've talked about how terrible their offense, they're at the bottom of their lineup and their outfield has been, is Andy Pages. That is a prospect that they've kind of had lurking. He's, you know, we've seen him kind of pop onto some top 100 prospect lists, but never quite, you know, in the inner circle. He's already provided a jolt here. Now, it's probably going to come with a lot of strikeouts. It's going to kind of be in that Teoscar Hernandez mold. But that's still some life and some power at the bottom of the lineup that they just desperately need right now. And I think that they called him up at the right time, and I think he'll definitely help them.
I'll be seeing them on Wednesday and Thursday here in D.C. The Blue Jays taking 2 out of 3 from the Padres in San Diego. Jordan, I'm going to just read the top 5 Blue Jays in Fangraphs WAR from 5 to 1. Okay.
Okay.
Kevin Biggio, Ernie Clement, Justin Turner, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, and Dalton Varsho.
Dalton Varsho is turning it on. And I am glad I kept my Varsho stock because it was not the prettiest introduction to the Toronto Blue Jays fan base last year. It was like, okay, so this guy's just like an awesome outfield defender. We already have one of those in Kevin Kiermaier. No, he can be a very good hitter. It's in there. And he's really started to find that, which has been really cool. And he's still just marvelous defensively in the outfield. So certainly one of my favorite players. Really cool to see that for them so far. And that's a big series win. They're still, again, for the Blue Jays, you still watch them. And it's like, come on, like go win 8 of 10. Go, you know, kick some team's ass. And they can't get on that hot streak quite yet. I'm a little concerned how bad Bo has looked, to be honest. This is kind of a stretch we have not really seen from him. But yeah, they're solid, and that's a good. But Barrios looked awesome again. So he's right now, he's, you know, AL Cy Young. I mean, he's been outstanding.
Mariners over the Rockies, taking 2 out of 3. Weird series. There was a snow out, and then the Jacob Stallings play. I just want to briefly just touch about this. 0-0 game, bottom 9. Friend of the show, Ryan Stanek on the mound, and Rockies catcher, backup catcher, Jacob Stallings rips one to deep left. Looks like it's going to be a walk-off home run. The fan along the railing reaches over and obstructs Dylan Moore from making a catch against the wall, and the play is reviewed. And I think this is the most tense type of review. So the call on the field was a double for Stallings, right? So this could go three ways. It could be that's a double. It could be that's an out, top of the 10th. Or it could be, that's a walk-off home run, game over. And just like the difference between those two things. And they all looked like distinct possibilities, right? Like that play could have been called a home run and it could have been called an out. It was called an out.
Because of fan interference, to be clear.
Because of fan interference. It was called an out with the idea that that Dylan Moore would have caught the ball if the fan had not interfered with it, AKA the Jeffrey Meyer play. It was like a hilarious review because of the wide swath of what could have gone down.
Rockies go on to win that in extras anyway. Mariners bounce back to win the series. That, just on that play specifically, Rockies left field and the height of the fence and the way that the seating is, which is kind of just like a concourse, it's very unique, is the most ripe fence for fan interference, I think, in the league, like by far, right? Like obviously there's other fences that fans can reach over, but in the way that they can, you can essentially be standing up and like prepared to reach over and catch the ball. It, you're asking for fan interference all of the time. I've seen so many versions of that at that exact fence, but Mariners getting back on track. I mean, the thing with them is they've had the best pitching in baseball for the last 10 days and it's not even been close. That's what it was supposed to be. They have all of them. Castillo was amazing the other day. Hancock looked good. And even though they lost in that second, you know, that middle game, the pitching has just been spectacular. And now they have a huge series coming up this weekend or this week in Texas. So they will go to the Rangers this week. Looking forward to that one.
Speaking of the Rangers, they drop the series to the Braves. Braves taking 2 out of 3. Travis d'Arnaud filling in and ripping homers every which way while Sean Murphy is in the IL is exactly why the Braves have had Travis d'Arnaud and Sean Murphy on the same roster. When they traded for Murphy, it was like, why are they doing that? They already have a great catcher. Well, why have one when you can have two? Catchers get hurt all the time. And so if you have one waiting in the wings that can step in and provide offense, that's a big, big deal. D'Arnaud has been amazing last couple of weeks. Or sorry, in the last week. The other thing that's going on with him that we do need to talk about is Marcell Ozuna has been the best hitter basically the best hitter in baseball. He has 9 home runs. That is leading the league. He is a 201 WRC plus. He is exclusively DHing and he is just crushing the baseball.
Yeah. And he, you know, pretty much did this last year, but it was kind of lost in the, he wasn't this good last year, obviously, but he had kind of bounced back and had 40 homers last season. And it was just kind of amidst the Olsen and Acuna and Riley seasons, it was like, oh, he's just on the team too. But yeah, I mean, Ozuna's kind of shown that he's been able to be this level of hitter before. We saw it, you know, in the 2020 season. I think that's maybe the better comp as terms of this version of Ozuna. Listen, obviously, this is not someone that we are going to ever be especially excited to be cheering for. He's someone who has, you know, multiple extremely disappointing and troubling off-field issues, whether it's DUI, he had a domestic violence suspension. He's someone that has, of course, been very public about trying to be a better person and whatnot, which is nice. I mean, you'd rather that than the opposite, but it's, you know, obviously I totally understand there are going to be a lot of people that are not going to want to root for this person. And that is completely understandable, yeah, whether they're Braves fans or not.
I believe he's a free agent at the end of the year.
Oh my gosh. Is that,
that'll be just an interesting dynamic to see what a player like him gets.
$16 million team option, which you could have, if he keeps hitting like this, he will probably be back on the Braves in 2025, but fair point.
Two more series that were splits, Marlins and Cubs. Kind of a weird one there. Rain out on Thursday meant a doubleheader on Saturday, I believe. The main thing, like the Marlins taking two is good for them, but they're still bad. Rodery Munoz with his pitch really well in his MLB debut on Saturday. Adbert Alzolay, who was the Cubs closer last season and was really good, has blown 4 of 7 save chances so far this year. He got bumped to the eighth inning role through a scoreless frame in the Sunday game in a loss, I believe. That's just one area of concern. Now, the Cubs have enough other arms in the bullpen between Hector Neris, Mark Leiter Jr., where they can, you know, patch it together. But they got to get Adbert right. When he's cruising in the ninth, he's awesome. That's just one area of concern. Anything else in the series?
Yeah, one other thing with the Cubs is Imanaga continues to look great. And then Jameson Taillon looked really good in his first start of the year. He was like sneaky solid, horrific for the first couple months last year. And then he was pretty much Jameson Taillon. And like, that's another stabilizer that I think that pitching staff could really use. And it was nice to see him out there.
Last year is D-backs Giants. The Blake Snell, Jordan Montgomery matchup ended up in a 17-1 win for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Most of that was not against Blake Snell, but it was still just a hilarious way for that to end.
17 runs, which was, I think, like one of the 5 highest scoring efforts from any team at Oracle Park ever. So it's very weird. Yeah, Giants, you know, bounce back in that second game and then lose the series on Sunday. Credit to the Diamondbacks. We finally got a Giants home run, which was nice. Jorge Soler, he listened to the podcast and he was like, fine, I will hit a home run. Here you go.
But then they had a couple more. They were all during the day. So I'm not sure how the light show plays during the day. But Jung-Hoo Lee with a home run to right. And then Patrick Bailey. Is it a splash hit if there is no splash? So obviously at Oracle Park in San Francisco, the Cove is in right field beyond the wall outside of the stadium. And if you hit a ball into the Cove, it makes a splash. However, Patrick Bailey hit one directly into the kayak, like not
no splash,
next to the kayak.
No splash at all.
There was no splash. It was a homer into the cove, but it did not splash. Is that a splash hit?
Yeah.
Let us know, baseballbarbacast@gmail.com.
I believe it will still count as a splash hit. But no splash was made, but
it's a dry splash hit.
Yes. But I think you have to. As long as it clears everything and lands beyond that barrier, it should be. And by the way, Patrick Bailey,
he's good.
Swinging it. He looks
Speaking
great.
Of water features, let's wrap up with this. Did you see the Colton Cowser, Craig Kimbrell thing?
I did. This was funny.
So good. So Craig Kimbrell gets saved 422 on Saturday night, I believe tying him with Billy Wagner on the all-time list. Uh-huh. That is obviously a ball that Craig Kimbrell would want to keep, right? Colton Cowser catches the last out in left field to end the game and just throws it into the fountains.
Chucks it.
And then later he goes, yeah, I didn't realize, so I yeeted it, which is great. And then Kevin Brown used yeet on his home run call when Cowser homered on Sunday.
The ball was retrieved,
and there was a clip of Kimbrell putting it in a bowl of rice like he had dropped his iPhone in the toilet. So I thought that was very funny.
Quick thing. The saves leaderboard is just amazing. Mariano Rivera, 652. Trevor Hoffman, 601. Lee Smith, 478. K-Rod, 437. And then you have Kenley Jansen, 425. John Franco, 424. Kimbrell, Wagner, 422. So Jansen and Kimbrell are essentially going to be neck and neck for, I guess, the rest of their careers, as long as they can hold on to closer jobs. And they will probably both pass K-Rod and maybe Lee Smith.
Hall of Famers in my book. Jordan, that is all we have to talk about today. I'm writing an article that's going to go up today that I'm really excited about the word show, S-H-O-W, as an adjective in the baseball context, and how, you know, like in our lives, welcome to the show, or let me show you something. We understand that noun, verb. But to describe something as show as an adjective is a very distinctly Major League Baseball phrase in the lexicon. And so I decided to write about it, got a lot of funny quotes. Have you ever used show in this manner?
Oh, definitely. But like, I don't feel like you have to be a big leaguer or close to a big leaguer to even have to be qualified.
To use it.
Because it's like, who am I to tell you what show? I mean, again, I think your piece will help elucidate what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make either of us authorities on it, right?
No.
You've got to ask the people who can use it and say it with a straight face.
Right. Like, I would never say something a show unless first who is approved by one who's in the show.
Right.
You know?
The
funniest one in there that I think you will really appreciate is the idea of the double flap helmet. And how in the minor leagues and in college baseball and high school baseball, helmets have ear flaps on both sides because that just makes sense. However, when you get to the big leagues, there's enough money, disposable income, that you can get a helmet that protects only one side of your face because you only hit with one side. Unless in switch hitters will have a righty and a lefty helmet that they'll go between, unless you're Jed Lowry. And so a lot of players are like, you know what's show is having the single flap helmet. Like that little attention to detail, that extra little something special upon reaching the major leagues, that is what show means.
Well said. Big week coming up this week. As I mentioned, I'll probably be at least one of the Phillies and Reds games. We have 6 four-game series opportunities coming up this week. One of the busiest opportunity weeks of the year. Blue Jays at Royals, A's at Yankees, Brewers at Pirates, Padres at Rockies, White Sox at Twins, Phillies at Reds. Twins, excellent opportunity. The White Sox are coming to town. Let's rack up some wins here. Make Jake feel a little bit better. That'd be nice to see.
Spring cleaning, okay? Opportunities all around. Jordan, I hope you have a phenomenal Passover.
Yes.
I need to go burn the chametz. And I will talk to you after the Seder.
We will talk to you on Wednesday after our Seders. Everybody have a good next couple days. Enjoy the baseball. Thank you to our producer, Andrew Hartz, for taking care of this episode, making it possible. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. Thank you all for listening, and we will talk to you all very soon.